Good morning. 00 hours. Rain. 69 degrees. Good morning. 01 hundred hours. Rain. 68 degrees. Good morning. 02 hundred hours. Rain. 69 degrees. Penetrating the bay like no one else can. This is the W8CMN repeater in Guilford. Good morning. 03 hundred hours. Cloudy. 69 degrees. W8CMN repeater in Guilford. Good morning. 04 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 69 degrees. Good morning. 05 hundred hours. Cloudy. 69 degrees. Penetrating the bay like no one else can. This is the W8CMN repeater in Guilford. Good morning. 06 hundred hours. Cloudy. 69 degrees. W8CMN repeater in Guilford. Good morning. 07 hundred hours. Cloudy. 68 degrees. Good morning. 08 hundred hours. Cloudy. 71 degrees. Penetrating the bay like no one else can. This is the W8CMN repeater in Guilford. Good morning. 09 hundred hours. Cloudy. 72 degrees. WHCMN, repeater in Guilford. Good morning, 1000 hours. Cloudy. 70 degrees. Good morning, 1100 hours. Mostly cloudy. 74 degrees. Penetrating the bay like no one else can. This is the WHCMN repeater in Guilford. Good afternoon, 1200 hours, cloudy, 74 degrees. Good afternoon, 1300 hours, cloudy, 77 degrees. WHCMN, repeater in Guilford.
Mobile.
Good afternoon, 1400 hours, mostly cloudy, 79 degrees. Good afternoon, 1500 hours, mostly cloudy, 80 degrees. Good afternoon, 1600 hours, mostly cloudy, 81 degrees. penetrating the bay like no one else can. This is the WHCMN repeater in Guilford. Good afternoon, 1700 hours, mostly cloudy, 83 degrees. WHCMN, repeater in Guilford. Good evening, 1800 hours. Partly sunny. 82 degrees. Good evening, 1900 hours. Partly sunny. 84 degrees. Penetrating the bay like no one else can. This is the WHCMN repeater in Guilford.
WAAQJE, Saginaw. I'm a train.
Good evening, 2000 hours. Mostly cloudy. 82 degrees. Good evening, 21 hours. Mostly sunny. 77 degrees. WHCMN, repeater in Guilford. Good evening, 22 hours. Partly cloudy. 75 degrees.
KFAAYL, monitoring. KFAAYL, KEHCB. What's up? up there, Charlie Brown? How are you enjoying this yet again muggy evening? KHCB, KF8AYL. Did I lose you? KHCB, KF8AYL.
This is KHCB.
What, did I lose you there? I responded to your first transmission, and then there was nothing.
I was on the 3-3 repeater in Saginaw. I think there might be an issue. That's the second time I answered somebody and never heard them. I switched over to the 3-1 to see if I heard you come back or not.
Ah, I see. Weren't you getting a new antenna or something too, I heard yesterday?
Yeah. Good thing I wasn't planning on using it for phone. It's got terrible SWR for phone. I played around with it trying to see if it would tune on the upper part of 40 meters, and I didn't like the results. Maybe you need longer radios or more of them for that part of the band. I'm not sure. But I did play around radios. I had 2 17-footers, and I connected to it. And I had it tuned to 1.1, and I took the radios off, and it went to like 1.4, almost 1.5, just by taking the radios off. And I went, well, they're clearly doing something.
Well, 1.4, 1.5 isn't horrible. It's not great, but you know, for a base, you know, for if you're using it as a base or something, yeah, that's probably not desirable. I get it.
I plan on using it for POTA, so I'm going to. If weather's more appropriate tomorrow, I plan on going down to my park. There's a nice larger open area, and I plan on rechecking the tuning on it, and then I'll probably go somewhere else that's even a larger open space, different soil composition, and test it there, because technically my township is marshland, so it's clay and hard soils. So I'm really not really sure where I have to go to find a different composition, but most of the places that I plan on using, it's marshland, so if it works here, it should work there, because all the POTA sites near me is DNR land, and it's marsh.
Yeah, well, we are in the Saginaw Valley here, so that's what you get.
Do you have any experience with ham sticks?
That would be a big negative. No, I do not. I got so much crap going on right now that this is as far I'm going to go in ham world for the time being anyway, for the next year or so probably. I'm probably not going to get into too much stuff until I retire and have a lot more time to play around with stuff.
Well, I loaded up pskreporter.info and typed in my call sign to see what kind of signal strength I was getting. And Texas, I had like a negative 15 at, I think, 15 watts. And all throughout the state. For some reason in Michigan, I was seeing negative 22 and stuff like that. And then Ohio, 15. I think the best signal I saw was negative 4. And that was in Wisconsin, I believe. And I even got outside the United States. I got a report in Canada. Canada. That was pretty good. It was less than 20. And I forgot the part of the country, but it's on the other side over there, near Russia, somewhere over there. I saw a report come up, and it was like 15 or 20 or something. I think that was the 18 I saw. So it was doing pretty good. I saw this one call sign. It was a W0RLD. But when it's all capital, it looks like the word world. So it says CQ world on my screen. I got to work this guy.
The transmit bait call sign. I could see that. That's pretty funny. I heard some guy come over the GMRS with WOZZ. I'm like, is that real? Or I think it was WOZY, WOZZ, something like that. With you know, the three numbers after it. But I don't know if that, I should probably go look that one up and see if it was actually real.
Yeah, another good clickbait one is Coax, K0AXL. He gets on the Fusion Network, Pleasant Valley repeater system. and he's the one that introduced me to GLARG, VEC, for doing online VE exams for people. It's a pretty cool group of people, too, by the way. Yeah, I think I worked him on digital as well.
Yeah, I actually bought a digital capable radio a little while back because it was like half off, but I've not pulled it out of the box because I know it's going to be a big, giant rabbit hole of learning and figuring it out and all that crap. A bunch of people told me, you just ditch the OEM firmware on it, put this open source firmware stuff on it, and it works much better. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know, but I know it's going to be a bunch of time that I don't have right now.
By the sound of it, you bought yourself a DMR radio.
Yeah, I think it's listed as such.
What brand did you get?
I don't know. I'd have to go look. Give me 30 seconds. I'll go look. All right. It's a TYT MD9600.
Is that the mobile style or the HT style?
It's a 50-watt mobile.
Yeah, hook that up to your computer with Chirp and with the appropriate cable. Download your radio to your Chirp. That way you get your image. And then put your channels into it. Save it and upload it back to your radio. That's the easiest method. And there's some very complicated crap you got to put in there, like your DMR ID and some other stuff. But I played around with the Alenco one time. I was able to get it working somewhat. I didn't have any DMR repeaters nearby, but I used it with a hotspot. And I would like to say I had a great experience, but I didn't. But apparently I bought a lemon, and the radio just wasn't wanting to work. Trying to get it to work with the FM repeaters, it couldn't barely hit my 3 mile away main repeater, which is the 2.4 in Saginaw. And that thing got the footprint down to Flint, and that HT could barely hit it. Every other radio I had hit it just fine. Yeah, I had troubles using it with my hotspot. I got into a TGIF group, and I ran into like 10 or 15 people that had that radio and swear up and down and love it. And they, I told them what my problem was, and they said, return it. You bought a lemon. So I did, but I went with a Fusion radio instead. Yeah, so when I bought that, apparently everybody says the OEM firmware is horrible, and to ditch it right off the bat and use this open source software called OpenGD77 or something like that, and just put that on it right away, and then it's much easier to program, you know, even with the chirp or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I know it's going to be a big time consumer, so trying to do a bunch of other stuff right now. I'd like to, but maybe this winter. We'll see. Well, if it doesn't work out for you, I'm sure you can find somebody to sell it to. I recommend Fusion. Fusion, there's no programming. It's just plug and go. And you can hook up a hotspot, Pi-Star, or you just buy one from TGIF Group. Keep built them. And just you get into any DNR group with Fusion crossover.
Penetrating the bay like no one else can. This is the WHCMN.
Yeah, I'd actually done a little bit of research beforehand, and where I'm at in the UP, there's pretty much no Fusion around there. It's all DMR in that area. So I don't know. I don't know anything about it. It's something new for me to get into that I'm looking forward to at some point. Yeah, according to that address you gave me, you're pretty far up there. The Eastern Michigan Link don't go that far up yet. But they do have a like one or two in the Upper Peninsula, but it's closer to the lake. But they're expanding all the time. Who knows? Maybe they'll have one up close enough to where you could hit it with a beam. Yeah, well, after I get this building in up north, which is one of the things I'm working on, I'm going to have to build the stupid thing myself, because builders there seem to want stupid money to put anything up. I'm going to get some kind of tower off the edge of it or on top of it or something, so and I'm on a bluff on Lake Superior there, so if I can get that, then I'll be really set up for that particular area for sure. I'll be going out over the lake and pretty much across the whole west end of the UP there should be able to get.
Penetrating the bay like no one else can. This is the WHCMN repeater in Guilford.
That's weird. She just said that. Hasn't been 10 minutes yet. KEHCV Friday. Yeah, if she doesn't finish, she wants to keep repeating it, because I think it's a protocol to say it every hour or something. Yeah, every 10 minutes, just like we're supposed to do. Makes a great clock. If you hear it go off, you know you missed your cue. So what have you been up to today? It's been awfully muggy. Were you out in that crappy weather?
Today was the normal day job, and then a bunch of research on how to do burn foundations. 2,500 ways to do it. I just can't seem to pick one.
Farm Foundation, that's for your place up north?
Yeah, that's affirmative. I'm trying to get a barn in up there. So I mean, there's an old house on the property that it kind of good enough to, you know, use as a cabin for now. People were living in it, but it's pretty rough. It's been neglected, and so that all needs redone. So my plan was I'm going to build this barn because there's no garage or anything right now. So I'm going to, I want a barn anyway. So I'm going to build a barn. That way I can stage all the stuff that I'm going to need to be able to redo the house. And then when that's done, we can move up there. That's my master plan anyway. We'll see if it works out.
Have you looked into those pre-built homes, Tesla homes? See if it'd be cheaper to have one of those sent up and installed?
Well, I might get lynched in the community if I did that for the house, because the house that's there is actually a historic home. It's the old stamp mill superintendent's home, and it's in books and other stuff, but the mining company owned it in the 1900s through 1978, something like that. The stamp mill shut down in 26, and then the mining company just owned it and rented it out to anybody that wanted to be there. And for the most part, in like the 50s and 60s and 70s, it was just used as a summer camp. And somebody bought it in 78 and kind of redid it and put heat back in it and stuff like that. So and then they were living in it. It's a really nice home. The woodwork is gorgeous inside. It's just been really neglected. It just needs kind of gone through in total. Like, all the mechanicals are garbage. Everything needs done. You know, the plaster's all cracked. That all needs to come out and be redone. And just stuff like that. But the home itself, the bones are really good. If I tore it down, they'd be, I think the locals would be, not so happy. And this is KF8AYL.
You had to go buy a historical home, huh? You probably got to go through Historical Society to paint the door.
That I don't. There is none of that up there. There's actually not even any zoning, so I could do whatever I wanted to do.
Well, that's good news. you're going to have to go through that place and gut it and get rid of all the knob and tube wiring and everything to make the place safe to live in.
Well, there's knob and tube. Some of it's active, some of it's not. Like the first several ones I put my meter to, they weren't active. I'm like, okay, so all this knob and tube is not active. And then I put my meter to a couple other sections of it. I'm like, oh, these ones are active. All right, well, gotta watch out for. I mean, there's everything in it. That's the problem with the mechanicals. Is there's 25 generations. You know, there's knob and tube. There's the silvers, 40, 50, 60 stuff. There's some Romex. People hacking on stuff in places. It's a total mess.
Yeah, that's one thing I know, like, about old homes, is all the stuff people leave behind in them. When they upgraded it, they should have pulled the old out, but it's so much work that they just put new in and leave the old, creating problems for the future generations.
Nobody does that. Nobody tears out the old stuff. They just add on there. And I think the last 20 years, the people that were living there that we bought it from, I don't think they knew what they were doing. They would have people come in and do, they hire an electrician or a plumber or whatever. And I think those contractors would come in and go, yeah, I ain't touching any of this. I'm just going to add on some stuff over here to make work what you want to work.
Yeah, it's a whole legal thing. Had a contractor come out to do a roofing on our house one year, and as he was taking the plywood off, because it was damaged, to put new plywood down, he had to point out a few things. Apparently, the person that built the home cut some corners, and he can't touch it, because if he touches that one little thing, he legally has to go over the entire house and fix every corner that was cut, shortcutted. Just because of the way the rules are, I guess. Which is probably why the contractors stay away from the tube and wiring, because then they got to gut the whole thing, costing them more time and money.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty used to looking at some of those homes up there when I first walked into that basement utility room in the downstairs up there. I was taken aback. I'm like, oh my God, this is a total mess. Like the boilers, you know, half a foot from the electrical box, you know, the main electrical box, and there's 25 add-on little fuse boxes to the main electrical, and I'm like, oh my God, this whole room just needs to be nuked.
And if you go online and look up houses being rewired and stuff like that, you'll see some horror story videos where people's houses would catch fire and stuff because somebody would put a nail through the wall to hang a picture. Well, they struck the knob and tube wiring, and they got electrocuted and lit the wall on fire. And every video with the licensed experts, the ones that put videos up teaching caution, they say, if you got knob and tube, pull that stuff out. And then they point to the video and say, this is why.
Well, you can deactivate it all, too, and run Romex or do whatever, but all the plaster's cracked everywhere, so, the whole house needs to come down to its kind of studs, so you can pull all that crap out, rewire it, replumb it. I already did kind of replumb it. I ran PEX everywhere and bypassed all the old 1900s galvanized crap that looked like some 140-year-old's artery, just to have working plumbing, because it wasn't really working well at all. But, the electrical is a mess, the heating's a mess, the walls are a mess. The bones of the house are great, the woodwork's beautiful. I'm gonna try to save that. Gut it, redo it. We'll see how it works.
Well, the great thing about you taking it down to the studs, you get all that old stuff out of there. You can increase the cavity size of the wall so you get proper installation to keep you warm in the winter and cool in the summer.
Oh, the walls are plenty thick. The walls are 12-inch rough sawn. 12-inch. 1 foot. But they're not insulated. Somebody did do a half-ass blow-in job. I think the guy who bought it from the mining company in the 70s, when he wanted to live there, I think he did the blow-in job in the late 70s. It's not very good, though. It's really inconsistent. Because back then, when they built those homes, they had free steam heat from the stamp mill. The whole little town there had free steam heat from the stamp mill, so nobody cared about efficiency. They had free supply. They just ran steam pipes through the whole little town for the 30 homes that were there, and the superintendent's house, our house, is up on the hill, kind of away from town a little bit, but free steam heat, yep.
Oh, you got some nice wall cavities there. My house was built in 1958, and I only got 7/8 of an inch, less than 1 inch, for a cavity, and they're not insulated. And it just cuts the that firewall sheet in there, and that's it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun trying to fix somebody else's mess. I don't like doing that under normal circumstances, but in this case, to save a historic home, not opposed to it, the home itself is, say, the bones are perfect. Yeah, I mean, the roof line is awesome. It's not sagged. You know, everything is perfectly straight. It's really well built. I mean, it's got 9.5-foot ceilings on the first floor. It's got walk-in closets. It's got big window openings. Kind of unheard of things for 1900. So, I kind of want to save that, the structure, but yeah, it needs redone.
How much have you got started on it? You got it, gutted out yet?
This is KFAAY Alpha ID. No, I haven't done anything to the house yet aside from run new PEX plumbing to all the fixtures so I can drain it easily and have working plumbing because that wasn't really working. But like I said, the plan is I'm going to build this barn and then I can stage all the materials and things I need for to fix up the house after that, and then we'll get that done and move up there and retire. That's the plan anyway.
All that old wiring and stuff and tubing in that house should pay for your PEX.
Yeah, well, we'll see what the scrappers are paying. They want to give you pennies on the dollar.
KEACB. Do the strappers pay any better up there compared to down here?
I don't know about for copper, but for steel, steel's pretty much the same.
I figure being pretty much nowhere that that pay a little bit better.
I cut all of that old galvanized pipe out of there, and I had a bunch of other steel that was just strewn about the property that I collected, and there was an old wood boiler in the basement that was all cracked and not working. That was like 800 pounds of steel by itself. I had to torch the thing up in the basement to get it out of there. I have no idea how anybody even got that in there, but yeah, it was about the same price as it was going for down here at the time I got rid of all that.
So you go up there every now and then to do a little work?
Well, I'm usually up there about every 2 weeks out of the month, but I've been home a lot lately because my wife's had surgery on her foot and has been unable to walk for the last 4 weeks. She's now just getting to put some weight on it and kind of starting to get off the crutches, so if she gets back to walking and driving, I'm going to go back up there and build this barn.
You already got the barn on order?
Not specifically, no. I'm not doing a kit. I have it spec'd out. I know exactly what I'm doing, but I'm just going to buy the pieces as I'm going. From the local place, they're giving me a pretty decent discount that kind of competes with Menards. I mean, Menards is the closest, like, big box stores in Marquette. That's an hour and a half away. The local place is pretty close, and it's local, so I can just pop in there with a trailer and pick up stuff as I need it. I don't need paid delivery costs and stuff. So I'm just going to do that piece by piece. Yeah, it's also easier on the pocketbook.
I didn't mean like a kit. I meant like you had it spec'd out like a kit, and they pull all the pieces and drop it off to, you know, make your life easier. I was just wondering if you did it that way or not.
Yeah, I've got it pretty much spec'd out. I know exactly what I need, and I've told the lumberyard that, and they got a whole quote built up for me, and they're ready to buy it. I just need to tell them. I'm like, no, I'm going to buy this in pieces. I'm going to do, like, this section, so I'm going to need these pieces, and that's, you know, a quarter of the cost, and then a few months later, I'm going to come around with the next order. That's going to be another quarter of the cost or whatever. They're all good with that.
Hey, you got any friends up there that are going to help you put the barn together?
Yes and no. I know a couple of guys that own vacation homes there, so they're there sometimes. They said they've helped me, but, you know, they kind of got to be around and already there. So, yeah, I mean, I'll have some help. The neighbor down the road, I know him. He said he'll help, you know, if I need help setting trusses, you know, a couple extra hands for a few hours on a day. No big deal. So, stuff like that. Yeah, I got some hands. But for the most part, it's going to be a one-man show.
Yeah, when you get that place all built and done, you're definitely going to be ready to retire. You'd be too tired to pick up the radio.
Maybe. We'll see. It should be fine. I don't know. I don't like doing this stuff sometimes, but, you know, when it's done, I feel a good sense of accomplishment that I did it. I kind of want to just pay somebody, but the money they were coming in at was like, you know, materials were like X, and they were wanting about 3.5 times X of material. And I was like, what? Where are you getting these numbers? I can't even if I spec'd 5 guys for, you know, at $200 an hour for, and put them in their own hotel rooms with $200 a day per diems, and I can't get anywhere near these labor costs. How are you getting 3 and 4 times materials cost on your labor? I don't get it. I don't understand where they're coming from. But that's the market right now. And people are buying their buildings, so I'm like, I guess I'm doing this myself.
Yeah, they're just praying on the weak, basically, you know, the ones that can't do it themselves, and they got no choice but to pay these outrageous prices to get it done because they can't go anywhere else. And they're just taking advantage of it, sounds like.
Yeah, I don't know. I tried to do the math to see where their labor was coming from, and even if I doubled the man hours and did all kinds of ridiculous things, I could only get to about 2/3 of their labor numbers, and that was with ridiculous assumptions. The realistic assumptions were way less. And I'm like, so you guys are wanting to profit. I don't know. I don't know where they're coming from, but whatever. They're not getting my money, so.
Yeah, it might take you longer, but at least you'll have the money to get the place done the way you want it, and probably still have money to spare for that antenna and tower.
Yeah, I need it for that and my the Starlink internet that's there. I have a little mini Ron tower that I just stuck in the ground. It's only, I don't know, 50. I got one 10-foot section plus a 10-foot in the ground. That's half of it's out. That's 15-foot plus the top. So I think it's 25 feet in the air, 30, 28 feet, something like that. And that Starlink's a little bit obstructed, so your internet gets a little bit cut off for little microseconds outages. But yeah, I need to get something up higher so I can get out of the trees, out of the woods.
So it looks like it's gonna be a very beautiful place when you get done.
like I say, it's just a goal. We'll see if I can attain the goal. One step at a time, baby steps. Crap may happen between now and then, and it's gonna be on the edge as far as affording it and being able to do it. But I've always been a goal-driven guy, so take the goal, spread it out, see if you can accomplish the steps to get to your goal. That's my goal.
When you finish the goal, you're going to have to take a really nice picture of the place and turn it into a QSL card.
Well, you got me on that one. What's a QSO card? I don't think I've heard of that term before.
Yeah, QSL card. It's a postcard. You send it to a ham. It has a picture on it, call sign, time, date, frequency, work, mode, and signal report.
And you can send this somehow over the radio?
Technically, yes. People do use SSTV to send their QSL cards. I don't know how to do that, but I've read that you can. But usually the good old USPS is how it's done. And then there's a electronic QSL. The website's eqsl.cc. And it's a free account, and you can set up a basic QSL card, and then you can set up your digital software or your logbook, and then you upload your logbook, and it automatically will send eQSL cards out to every ham that you worked.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think I've heard of that. What's that website that a bunch of people use, QRZ.com or something like that? But I think I belong to that. I made an account on one of those.
Good evening. 23 hours. Partly cloudy. 73 degrees.
Yeah, QRZ. Yeah, I'm a member there. That way I could have upload access. So my software can do it automatically. And which is just easier for me. I'm also got an eqsl.cc account. It's connected to a software, so every time I work a digital station, it gets uploaded to the logbook of the world, QRZ, and it sends out an eQSL card with one click. And the software that does all that hard work is called Grid Tracker. You download that on your computer, and you set it up to get the log information from your WXJTX software, which is used for doing FT8, FT4, and stuff like that. And so when you click log on that, it passes it over to Grid Tracker, and then Grid Tracker passes it on to those other three places. It just makes things easy and less complicated once you get it set up.
Oh, all right. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I'm on the QRZ. I made an account there, but other than that, I've not looked into too many other things that are going on there. I don't even know why I made an account there. I think to be able to see how many people look me up, because a lot of people seem to use that site for looking people up instead of the FCC website. But because I'll sometimes, like, especially in UP, I'll throw my call out on certain frequencies and then go in the QRZ. Nobody responds, but then you go in the QRZ and you'll see two or three people have looked you up. So, okay. Somebody's listening, but they don't want to respond.
Yeah, once you get your general and you get it into HF, you're definitely going to want to get a logbook of the world account. It's free. It's just they make it more complicated than it needs to be, but it's free. Once it's set up and you're set up on your computer, it's easy. You just, you know, use a logging software like RumLogNG, which is free. And every time you make a contact, you log it. And, you know, you could upload daily, weekly, monthly. And it confirms your contact with the other person. And you get these digital certificates and awards for working so many stations or grids and countries, states, and continents, and a few other things I can't think off the top of my head. And it's like little accomplishments you get.
Well, that's interesting. I might have to look into that. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, you pay the $40 a year to QRZ, and they will automatically sync their logbook with Logbook of the World, so both have the exact same information, and the QRZ is easier to use, so setting that up automatically is the best way to go. And then when you log into QRZ, you'll see a little circle with a star. If you got a star, it's been confirmed. If it has a circle and a star, it's been confirmed in both books. And once you got enough confirmed working one of those categories, you log in, go to your logbook on QRZ, and you apply. You could literally look up to see what ones you've got a credit for that you've worked the proper prerequisites, and then you click on a button, and it will verify everything and give you the digital certificate. They email it to you, and you can re-download it. You can print them out, hang them up on the wall, and stuff like that. I need Hawaii, and I get all 50 states worked, but Hawaii is eluding me.
All right, interesting. So when you say HF, what bands are you actually doing that on mostly?
It's mostly limited to what you got for antenna. I got a 20-meter dipole. I just got the 40-meter hamstick. I used to have a long wire. I have it, but I took it down. But any of the bands, 6 all the way up to 180. And there's actually awards for doing things on each band, making so many contacts on each band, and modes, and it's endless, seems like. But they all count. So if you make contact 80 meters with Hawaii and 20 meters with Canada, and they all add up to give you certain ones, like your continents, your states, and stuff like that. And POTA, P-O-T-A dot A-P-P, that's the website, POTA.app. And you could do parks on the air as a hunter, where you hunt these HF signals, and you work them, they log it, and upload their log to POTA. And you log the contact on the POTA app, and once you get, like, it's kind of the same thing, like so many states, so many places, and stuff like that, you get the little hunter awards, and then they got the opposite as activator. So you can go and activate places and get stuff. And if you're really into traveling, you could travel and activate every state and stuff like that if you're into traveling. I'm not, but I'll work what's local to me and have fun doing that and chase off the mosquitoes because it's, well, marshland.
Oh, well, that sounds pretty interesting. Do the higher elevations matter as much at those fan levels?
I'm not 100% sure on that one. Heights might always, but there's different configurations, different style antennas, and stuff. Like, you can do inverted Vs, you can do an NVIS, I think it's called, and it gives you, like, more of a vertical takeoff, so if you're in a place where you're lower to the ground, you can use that antenna, and it'll shoot your signal up higher, and radios, ground planes, there's a antenna solution for every location. Yeah, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, up near the my place in the UP, not far away, up by Copper Harbor, which is at the tip of the Keweenaw, there's a quote mountain called Brockway Mountain. I think it's the second tallest place in Michigan. And unlike the first tallest place in Michigan, which I've been to, I think that's called Mount Abron, and you can only get there by, ATV or hiking, some long hike, or I was there on a snowmobile. That's in the middle of the forest, but Mount Brockway Mountain is way out in the open, and it's right on Lake Superior as well, at the tip of the Keweenaw, so it has a very broad range of unobstructed everything. And I've seen I've been going there for years. I've seen a lot of hams set up top there doing stuff over the last 30 years or so. So people are definitely up there doing something. I wasn't sure what they were actually working, but the next time I see them, I'm going to ask them now that I'm a little more aware.
Yeah, actually, really cheap antenna setup. All you'd have to do is get a balun for it. Would be a long wire antenna. So if you want to work all the bands all the way up to 180 meters, you could either go half wave at 270 feet, or you go full wave at 540 feet. But you got the land, it sounds like. You could literally put two poles up and stretch out a long wire about 30 to 35 feet off the ground, and being way up there where you're at, man, you could work probably everything, which is why there's so many hams going up there.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Something to look forward to in my retirement.
That'll also make a great hobby when you're taking your lunch and your coffee break while you're working on that barn.
Yeah, it could be interesting. I might find some time here to do something with some of the lower bands. Maybe I'll go get the general. We'll see. I'll probably do it anyway at some point, but it could happen.
Yeah, who knows? You'll be up there working on your barn, get on FT8, and you'll see my call sign one of these days, probably.
Yeah, maybe. I've heard some really weird call signs up there. You get a lot of different ones coming over the UHF, VHF around there. Well, there's a lot of Canadian ones that come through from across the lake.
Yeah, the Victor calls. Yep.
Well, I see a mouse milling around over in the corner of my barn here, and I'm gonna go smash that bastard. I'm gonna say 73 for now. Well, I got an eye on this bastard.
All right, KEAC, 73.